Then I looked on all the works that my hands had done, and on the labor in which I had toiled. And indeed all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun. Solomon began his career as the golden-haired boy of Israel. When he was anointed king, the trumpets blasted and admirers flocked around him, patted him on the back. Young Solomon, you're headed for a great future. To begin with, in life, things normally go rather well. Life looks promising. Success awaits on the horizon. The grass, we think, will be greener just on the other side. And even if I have trouble today, I always have tomorrow. But somewhere, some place, at some point in life, a young man, or should I say a middle-aged man, says to himself, what I would be, I am not. What I thought I would have, I do not. What I thought I am not. It is like some dream, a snow white fantasy that turns into a Freddy Krueger nightmare. Everything starts so well, so promising, so good. But like Humpty Dumpty, all the psychotherapists and all the get-rich-quick schemes can never put the dream that you had together again. Solomon's dream came true. Almost too bad for him, because he left out just one part of the dream. It turned into a nightmare. We want to think this morning about the gods of Solomon, or we could have titled our message today, How I Tried to Have Fun in Life but failed. Consider with me from the text Ecclesiastes 1:12 through 2:18. Consider the first god of King Solomon, the god of knowledge. It all started so well for the young man. He had a dream. You can read about it in 1 Kings chapter 3, God came to him and said, young man, I've been watching you, and if you want to ask anything of me, then I'll give you that. What do you want? The young man said, Lord, I'm not smart enough. I'm not wise enough to know the difference between right or wrong. Give me wisdom so that I can rule these people well. God said to him, because you didn't ask for money, and you didn't ask for beauty, and you didn't ask for power, you didn't ask for the death of your enemies, I'm going to give you what you asked for, and I'm going to give you everything else besides, and you're going to be the best looking, the strongest, the most powerful, the richest man who has ever lived to this point in history. And so he was. But King Solomon, after asking for knowledge, became a man who was frustrated. You can read about that in Ecclesiastes chapter 1. He says, I, the preacher, in verse 12, was king over Israel. In verse 13, I set my heart to search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. And then notice the sad conclusion in verse 18. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. The God of knowledge was that which King Solomon went after. The God of knowledge is that which you and I also place a supreme value upon. I think when we say to our children and to ourselves, you need to go to school in order to get an education. Now, parents, don't be mad at me for saying that. I believe that too, to some extent. But the God of knowledge, Solomon says in verse 17, is like grasping for the wind. It's trying to get something that will never be quite there. Our school system, in some ways, acknowledges the God of knowledge in that it uses grades, an A, B, or C, in order to determine the worth of the child. If the child has knowledge and he makes an A, he has more worth than the F or the D. The comparisons between cultures in U.S. News and World Report several months ago was predicated basically on knowledge, on school and education. You will be valuable as long as you have the intellectual goods. The problem is not with knowledge, and that never was the problem with Solomon. The problem is the value that we place upon knowledge and education. You know, there are other ways to measure a person's worth other than whether he has knowledge. How about whether he loves his neighbor? How about whether he keeps his room neat? How about whether he is honest? How about whether he is a man or a woman of integrity? We dutifully send our children to school to get an education. The term is ludicrous because they're getting a value system. And then we say, when it comes to Sunday school or youth group or church camp, we say to those same children, well, I'll let you make up your mind as to whether you should go. Parent, what is the value that you are communicating to your child when you do that? You are saying to your child, it is important and it is primary and it is essential for you to go to that classroom and sit there, but when it comes to church, it is no longer a priority. What education, parent, are you giving your child when you let them make that kind of value judgment. Solomon had a God, and his God was knowledge, but it was like whistling in the wind. And the important values of Christ-like behavior were being sacrificed upon the altar of wisdom. Solomon had a God, he had a second God, and it was the God of pleasure. I don't believe for a minute that Solomon intentionally intended to leave God. I don't believe any man sets out to fall in grace. I don't believe any woman or any young person sets out with the purpose in mind, I'm going to sin and I'm going to break my fellowship with God. It comes on slowly. Until Solomon's heart became a carnival of lust. His house became a pleasure palace. He had 700 wives and 300 concubines. Hugh Hefner could only look on with envy. Ecclesiastes 2:1-3, he said, I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with mirth. Therefore, enjoy pleasure. I said of laughter, verse 2, it is madness. I searched in my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine while guiding my heart with wisdom. How to lay hold of folly. And then verse 10, whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. The God of pleasure is like trying to hold on to oil. You think that you have it, but it's going to slip right through your fingers. We sometimes place a supreme value not only on education, on knowledge, but also on pleasure, or should I say, the flesh. I mean, beauty. We even have a contest to decide who is the prettiest. I think in some ways our preoccupation with health is an indication of our sickness. I'm not saying we should not take care of our bodies. Indeed, we should. But are we making something more out of this stuff than we ought? When we do so at the expense of the more important matter. I said we have beauty contests to decide who has the best flesh. I know that there are other ways of evaluating that. That seems to be the impression. I think we do it in the church as well. I mean, when we bring in missionaries in many churches, we line them up, and essentially when that missionary is presenting a talk, we decide based on ungodly or worldly principles, we say this person ought to go to the mission field. They're good looking. The ones who are cosmetically acceptable get the financial support from the churches. Does that tell you something about where we are? Another way we give credence to the God of pleasure is highlighting the testimonies of the beautiful people. I mean, here is a little girl who is pigeon-toed and wears horn-rimmed glasses, sitting on the front pew, and she received Jesus in Vacation Bible School. And yet, everything that we do when we line up a testimony from somebody, we line up some starlet of stage screen or some outstanding sports figure in order to indicate that that little girl's testimony in coming to Jesus, it couldn't be half as important as this star's. Do we not fall prey to the same principle where we add pleasure to the flesh, even in the name of Christ, when we base our decisions and our judgments on that? The problem with pleasure is you've always got to do one better the next time. You will get to the point where Marie Antoinette said, nothing taste. Nothing taste in life anymore, because your pleasure sensations have been so drowned. Solomon rolled around in his pleasure dome until he got sick of it. And he said in verse 10, whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure. And then verse 11, and indeed all was vanity and grasping after the wind. Your pleasure God will turn sour on you too. It is an elusive God and you will never get a handle on it. Solomon's first God was knowledge. His second God was pleasure, and his third God, we read about in chapter 2, was the God of possession. Solomon was the first name. He gave meaning to the list of the rich and the famous. His wealth is incalculable. He had it all. Looks, 1,000 wives, riches, a great house. You can read about his projects in chapters 4 and verses 4 through 9 of chapter 2. I made my works great. I built houses, planted vineyards. I made gardens and orchards, and I had water pools, male and female servants and servants in my house, and greater possessions. Everything just got bigger and better and greater, and he was all raking it in, one thing after the other. But the God of possessions is like slowly pouring water into a leaky bucket. You will never get to the point where you will say, enough! I know a lawyer in Mississippi who is a millionaire. His wife one day went out and bought a $65 coat. And when he received the bill in the mail, he crumpled it up and he said, I thought to myself, how can I replace it? We sometimes place a supreme value upon getting and spending money talks, we say. The sole definition of poverty in our society is a certain amount of money a person makes. There are other ways to define poverty. What about the person who's lonely? What about the person who doesn't have God? What about the person who can't stop and help the little old lady? What about the person who can't pause and help Girl Scouts or do humanitarian deeds? There are other ways to determine whether a person is poor. And some of the poorest people in America today are not the ones who are below the dollar poverty line. Solomon's three gods, the God of possession, the God of knowledge, the God of pleasure. Ecclesiastes later on in chapter 5 says, he who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance with its increase. You'll never get enough. If you want to make that your God, God may give you the freedom to do it just as he gave Solomon the freedom to do it. But believe you me, you're going to end up just like Solomon. You can have it all. You can have your possessions. We can have our pleasure. We can have great knowledge and wisdom. But dear friend, we may not have life. Well, if Jesus Christ is not your God, you're going to end up like Solomon. Knowledge is not your God. 1 Corinthians 13 says, If I have all knowledge, and have not love, I am nothing. Nothing. Tell that to your children when you send them off to college or in the morning to school. Knowledge is not our God. Pleasure is not our God. For the psalmist says, in thy presence there is joy forevermore. Your pleasures, my pleasures will run out. But there is one that will never run out. God is able to give you more pleasure than you ever dreamed. And you'll be satisfied. And you'll be satisfied for all eternity. Possessions are not our God. A man's life consists not in the abundance of the things which he possesses, Jesus said. The Bible tells of a man who was sort of like Solomon, except he's in the New Testament. He made a lot of money. I imagine he had his pleasure along the way, and I'm sure he had to know something in order to make money. But he got so rich that he had to build a bigger warehouse to keep it in, and so that's what he did. And the very night that he decided to build it, God came to him and he said, you fool, tonight you're going to die. He thought that he had time. He thought that he had time to sit down and relax and enjoy it. I think it was Tolstoy. I'm not sure. I wish somebody would tell me. Who wrote a short story. And I may have told you this before. About a man in Russia. Who was promised as much land as he could circumference in one day. And so the title of the story is How Much Is Enough? And so right at the break of dawn, the man set out and he started running and panting and trying to cover as much land as territory as he could in order to get that as his possession. And at the end of the day, as the sun was going down, he came struggling. He finally made it back to the point where he started, and he fell down dead. And the conclusion of the story, how much land is enough? 6 feet. How much is enough for us when we realize the God of possessions doesn't work? The God of pleasure can't satisfy. The God of knowledge is a poor substitute for real life. think about it. Let's pray.